and welcome to the Women's Golf Show with me, Jenny Falconer, and my fabulous co-host, Beth Allen. Now, this is the podcast dedicated to the women's game, bringing you the latest news. And this week, we're going to be looking back on Minji Lee's big win while our intrepid reporter, Iona Stephen, meets a young woman carving out a career for herself behind the lens. Plus, we'll have our preview of this year's second major, the US Women's Open. And of course, Beth is excited about getting back to winning ways, well, hopefully, in par three, par four, par five. And she'll be playing today against our very special guest, who happens to, by the way, also be an absolute legend of the game. Good luck, Beth. How are you doing?
I'm really well. It's almost less than a week till I'm back in Scotland, so I'm excited to get back home. How are you?
I'm very good. I love that you're counting down to getting back to Scotland. I thought it was only like Scots like me that were constantly counting down to getting back there. So it's great to see that you are too.
Yes, of course. However, I've picked up a new hobby in Ohio that I hope to continue in Scotland. I am really into fishing right now.
Well, do you know Scotland's a good place for that?
I know, I hear that. My father-in-law is going to have to take me out. I think it's salmon that I need to catch in Scotland. Is that right?
Yeah, there's some good salmon up there. There really is. Although I've got to be honest, this is not the women's fishing show. So we're not going to digress too much and chat too much about it.
But it's so much more fun than golf for me right now.
But you just, with fishing, you just sit and have to have a lot of patience.
Yeah.
Actually, with golf, you have to have a lot of patience as well.
Yes, exactly.
It is great to have you back. It's always cold, snowing or raining where you are. What's it like where you are today?
It's sunny. It's been sunny for the last 2 weeks. So, yes, everybody's in a better mood and there's golf being played and it's all good. So, yeah, this has been a relief. I've finally thawed out.
Okay, well, if you could just pack that sunshine and bring it back here, because obviously in the UK, we are currently preparing for a huge Jubilee weekend of celebration in a week or so's time. So we need sunshine. If you could bring that with you, that would be good. Thank you.
I'll see what I can do.
Okay, Beth, I think we should really introduce our wonderful guest today. Do you want to do the honours?
Yes, please. Today we have a 7-time major winner, including 2 US Women's Opens. She has 40 wins on the LPGA and she is a World Golf Hall of Fame member. It is Kari Webb.
Yay! Hi, guys.
Hi.
Thanks for having me on.
Oh, no. Thank you so much for coming on. Right, where in the world are you, Kari?
My body is now telling me I'm back in Florida. I've been back for about a week. I was in Australia for just over 2 months. So getting back to the time change has been a little challenging the last week.
I bet. Do you know what? Everyone that works in the world of golf or anyone who plays golf, you must have amazing air miles. Every week I'm in exactly the same place, just here at home in London, yet you lot in a different country every time I speak to you.
Yeah. Yeah, that's, I guess, one of the benefits. It's just if the airlines let you use them.
I know, exactly. That's what I was going to say. Yeah, lots of airlines just can't use them.
You have done so much and achieved so much in the world of golf. Are we able to say, have you officially retired from playing now?
No, I have not officially retired. I don't think you'll hear that out of my mouth. And actually, I'm actually entered to play an LPGA event in a couple of weeks. So, yeah, we'll see how that goes.
Well, I am sorry for saying that as well. Now I feel terrible. How could I ever have even remotely assumed that? But it's brilliant to see that you're still playing, because you have been playing since you were like 7 or 8 years old.
Yeah, well, officially I started the game when I was 8. That's when I got my first set of cut down clubs. So I was playing with plastic toy clubs before that. So yeah, it's been a long time, life journey.
So what in the last few years, what is it that you've been doing mostly?
Well, obviously COVID put a halt to a lot of things for everyone. And I think in 2020, I'd planned to play a few. I'm not ever playing full time again, or even probably more than a handful of events a year. I just don't have the desire to practice anymore. So like even now, practicing in the next 2 weeks, I'm like, there's so many other things I'd like to be doing. You know, golf takes up a lot of time. I've realized that, especially when I don't do it as often. But, I had planned to play a handful of events in 2020, and I'd been dealing with a bit of a neck issue for 2 or 3 years in the lead up to that, and COVID hit, and the first 6 weeks were really a bit of an adjustment because I didn't know, you know, I didn't have any schedule, and that, you know, it took a while for me to just chill out and get used to that. But, you know, I think in the end, I used COVID as an excuse just to not play. You know, I never thought I'd be someone that, you know, I mean, I go out there, I want to be competitive, but, you know, I want to catch up with my mates. And, you know, during COVID restrictions, I wasn't allowed to do that. So, you know, I wasn't going to get much of the joy out of why I was going out there to do it. Rather, you know, obviously competing and playing, but, you know, I mean, if I was in my 20s, I would have been out there with bells on, but, you know, it just ended up being a nice excuse not to play too much. I didn't play at all last year, and played one at the beginning of the year in Florida here before I went back to Australia.
Oh, wow. You see, I love that you've been trying other things as well. Are you like Beth? You haven't been fishing as well, have you?
She loves fishing.
Yeah, I was going to say fishing's been a part of my life since I was little. I actually haven't done as much as I should in that time, believe it or not. But yeah, no, I don't know. It's funny. It's nearly the end of May and I've played one golf tournament and I've definitely found things to keep me busy. So, you know, life still goes by quickly even when you're not busy traveling the world.
But you've definitely been doing something new with course design, right? This is something I'm really excited that you're getting into because so few women are, you know, a part of that. So I'm excited to see what you do with that. And how have you been enjoying it?
Yeah, I've been really enjoying it. It's a lot, believe it or not, a lot more patience required than actually playing golf. We've been under contract for a course in Brisbane, Indooroopilly Golf Club, for 3.5 years now. And we're, I think, at the end of June, breaking ground. So... And only for 9 holes. So it's just been, I mean, COVID put a bit of a kink in the schedule there, but it's just been, it's, you know, lots of, I guess, how would I say, if I have a bad day at practice, I don't think it's for nothing. Like, you learn something from a bad day of practice. I've done so many, you know, designs of holes that you just tear up and throw out because of one thing or another. You know, you do work that you never use.
You got a style when you're doing a golf course. Could people turn up and go, oh, yes, I can tell this is a Carrie Webb course?
Well, I haven't done enough yet to say that I have, but I guess my goal is that it won't, I won't have a style in particular, that it'll suit where we are and, you know, and the landscape that's there. You know, I hope that, you know, like a Jack Nicklaus course has lots of left to right holes and left to right shaped greens. Like I hope that that's not a trait that is my course. I hope it's, you know, it's challenging, you know, from the back tees, but as well as very playable for everybody else from the tees further up.
I always like to propose a bunker-free course as well because I think that would be fun.
Yeah.
That's where I always spend most of my game. It's so frustrating.
So, Jenny, you'd like lots of water then, is that what?
Probably.
Maybe bunkers over water, actually.
Yeah.
Thinking about it. Or really little water pools, not big ones. That would be good.
Yeah.
It must, I mean, how exciting though to get to design a course as well. But yeah, I can imagine it's quite a long process because obviously designing a course and seeing it actually develop takes a number of years. It's not something that's a quick fix either.
Yeah, no, it is. And I think that's the part I've loved is learning that side of it. And right before I came back to Florida, we had a pre-construction meeting at Indooroopilly Golf Club with the engineers and the construction company and the club, and just the, you know, a lot of the, you know, under the ground stuff for me is, you know, is the learning process. You know, above the ground, I think we all kind of understand, but it's, you know, all the engineering below ground that, you know, there's just so much more involved than you would ever think.
What sort of courses like inspire you? Like what, you know, because I know you love the Sandbelt. I love the Sandbelt. Has there been like particular style that's been inspirational for you?
Yeah, you know, I think it depends on my mood. I do love the Sandbelt. I love links golf. You know, I feel like anywhere that makes you creative. So one of my goals in semi-retirement, Jenny, is that I need to come to Scotland and play more of the links courses. I've only really played a couple out of the rota that we've played, but you know, I didn't play the Open at Troon, but I played there when we played the Scottish Open at Dundonald. And I loved Troon as well. So
God, there's so many courses to enjoy. There really are. I've got a list that's in, like a really long list that I need to tick off. I do. I might have to come and visit you, Beth, when you're back over.
Yes,
and play
please.
With you. That would be good. We are going to talk a little bit more about something big you've actually been working on in Australia shortly as well, Carrie, after Beth has told us what is going on in the world of women's golf. Beth.
Yes, we'll start with the LPGA. 2 weeks ago, Kari's fellow countrywoman and former winner of the Kari Webb Series, Minji Lee, won her first LPGA Tour event of 2022. She's been knocking on the door all season with 3 top 10s already. Minji had a final round of 70 and birdied the last hole to clinch the Founders Cup in New Jersey by 2. The Amundi Evian Championship has announced a massive increase in purse size for this year, up a whopping $2 million from 21. It will see the winner receive $1 million. It follows the lead of other majors that have significantly increased their pots recently. The US Women's Open will nearly double its prize purse, and the AIG Women's Open set a record at last year's event and will grow by a further $1 million this year. Things definitely trending in the right direction in the women's game, I think. Speaking of Evian, the venue that the championship is played at hosted the LET's Jabra Ladies Open last week. Tia Cavisto earned her first LET win in a playoff against Whitney Hillier. Whitney was one of 4 players who had holes in one last week, all of which came on the 8th. Flake Johnson, Amy Bolden, and Aditi Ashok all get in on the party as well. Some good news regarding world number 2, Nelly Korda. She's back to practicing after surgery for a blood clot that has kept her from competing since March. Nelly posted 2 short videos on her Instagram where she's showing very little sign of any effects from the surgery, but still no word on when she may play next. Could it be the US Open? Maybe.
Oh, she's going to come. She can just be brilliant when she comes back, isn't she, as well?
Yeah, I hope so. Yeah, that was kind of a crazy thing to happen to her at such a young age. So I'm glad she's doing well and back to work.
Yeah. And regarding 4 players getting holes in one on the same hole, I mean, is that normal?
No. Okay. It's like every day I saw an Instagram story, somebody had a hole in one. And I must say, like, Evian might be one of the worst places in the world to get a hole in one because it's so expensive to buy a round of drinks.
Do they hold you to that?
I mean, I hold everyone to that.
So I always thought, well, surely there's like a free bar for all, you know, the golfers. So they're like, oh, this is the best place to get a hole in one.
No, there is during the tournament. That's probably a good time to have a hole in one.
Yeah, that's true.
Carrie, how many holes in one have you got in competitions?
I have 7.
Oh, competition. Okay, that's all right. Yeah. Quite good, Beth.
Okay, so I have 9, but only 4 in competition.
Oh wow! Right. Okay. That's quite impressive. That's quite impressive. I've got a birdie on a par 3. Well, it was quite impressive stuff there. Shall we get into the Founders Cup? Should we chat about that? Because was it the first win for Minji Lee since last year's Evian Championship? And probably really great to win something like that to then boost your confidence before moving on to the US Women's Open. Is that fair to say? Does it do that, Carrie?
Oh yeah, definitely. I think that's what Minji needed. You know, she's been, even last year, she probably didn't have the best first half of the year, but then obviously winning Evian since then, she's really kicked on. And her ball striking stats are just crazy. And all she really needed to see was some putts go in. And I think as the tournaments have ticked away this year, she has started to gain more confidence with her putting. And, you know, she made a bunch of them a couple of weeks ago at Upper Montclair to win the Founders Cup. So I think she's set up for a really big summer and, you know, right in the heart of the schedule.
Yeah, because it must be quite hard if you do make a few mistakes. You then put the pressure on yourself and it's almost like a little spiral, isn't it? Because you potentially could start getting stressed and it's a head game, a mind game as well. So you could start playing worse as a result.
Yeah, I think when you don't see the putts going in and you're hitting the ball nicely, it's easy to stay patient for a little while. But, you know, I think in the back of your mind, you know, if you start not hitting it quite as well, where are the scores going to come from? You know, it starts filtering through the rest of your game when you start not making many putts. So the fact that she's sort of held firm with the ball striking really is a good testament to her strength mentally, because, you know, that could have affected that as well.
Do you have any memories of her when she was a kid?
Yeah, well, I think I played with her when she was about 13. So it's crazy to think I've known her half her life. But she was good from a really young age, and then came up through winning my scholarship series 2 years in a row, and qualifying. Well, she qualified the second year. She qualified for the U.S. Open on her own at Pinehurst. So that was at 2014. So 2013 and 14 were her 2 years that she came over to the US, but the second time she actually competed.
Is there a bit of fellow Australian support there? I mean, even though she's from the other coast.
There's not enough of us to be separating ourselves from coast. So, actually, a lot of good players, you know, Whitney Hillier's name just came up. Mm-hmm. She came through my scholarship series, and she's from the other coast, from Western Australia as well, and obviously Hannah Green. So, and one of my scholarship winners this year, Kirsten Rudgley's from Western Australia. So a lot of good players coming out of Western Australia at the moment.
Can you tell us a little bit more about your scholarship and what you do? Because I think this is the coolest thing in the world, and what you do for them when you bring them over to the States and all of that.
Yeah, so it started in 07, 08. 08 was the first year the girls came over. And it started out just as a series of events in Australia, and that still happens, where the girls play, and it's sort of like a player of the year points are awarded for their finishes in events. And it used to be two off of that list would be the scholarship winners. But now we do one from that points list and one from the world amateur rankings, which helps girls that are in the States at college have a chance to be involved, which is good too. So, you know, someone like Gabby Ruffles wouldn't have been one of my scholarship winners if it weren't for the world ranking. So the two girls, they get a monetary scholarship, the two winners. And but for me, the coolest thing has always been that they come over to the States for a week. And in 08, when we were talking about what tournament it was going to be, I said, let's make it the US Open. And everyone, my team around me was like, are you sure you want these two girls at the US Open? And I was like, no, I'm not sure, but for them to have a great experience, it's got to be one of the biggest events we play. So let's, you know, the US Open fit into their amateur playing schedule as well in the US for the summer. So we made it the US Open. And it was just that week was, we ended up having three. We had a tag along Stacey Keating, which actually, if she hadn't have been involved, it still would have been successful. But she sort of made it where I was like, I want to do this every year. She was so excited to be there. I think because she wasn't meant to be. She definitely made the most of it and asked a million questions. And so it was great. The girls stay in a house. From that year on, I've rented a house and the girls stay in a house with me. And they've watched me, you know, prep for a major, and they walk the practice rounds inside the ropes, so they get to meet some of the other players. And and the full circle moment was 2019, staying in the house with the two scholarship winners that year, and Hannah Green and Sue O were staying in the house also, and they're both past scholarship winners. And Hannah Green went wire to wire to win the women's PGA, KPMG women's PGA. So that was amazing. You know, for me, you know, I think I celebrated like I won. I don't think I was the best mentor that night, but
I guarantee you were.
Well, how cool for them that, you know, to have you as a mentor along the way. I mean, you have won 41. I mean, it's just so many. Is there a win from your career looking back that you are most proud of or that really stands out for some reason?
It's hard to say one that I'm most proud of. I guess the one that does stand out the most for, I guess, the emotions that I admitted on the last hole was when I hold a wedge, the last hole of the Craft Nabisco in 2006. I hold that shot thinking that I might have won the event because I hold it to take a two-shot lead. But simultaneously, Michelle, we made a birdie behind me, so I was only one ahead when I got to the score tent. And then ultimately Lorena Ochoa ended up eagling the last also to force a playoff, and then I won the playoff. But the emotions that went through me when I held that shot. You know, I hadn't won on the LPGA the year before, and which was a disaster. But it was, you know, for me, I hadn't played my best golf, and that led to, you know, one of the best years of my career in 2006.
And we were talking earlier as well about, you mentioned it, Beth, how December's Australian Open is going to see the men. Oh, we were talking about it last week, weren't we, with Ali?
Yeah.
The men's and women's event played simultaneously will be on the same course and for equal prize funds. Now, Carrie, you've been one of the figureheads on this announcement, I guess. How did it all come about?
Well, I think Australia's kind of been the leader in men and women playing simultaneously for the same money for a while. The Vic Open's been doing that for, I don't know, 8, 9, 10 years now. And the prize fund kept getting bigger to the point where the LPGA and the European or the DP World Tour co-sanctioned the event, and then it got the notice of the rest of the world, and then from there, obviously, you've seen similar events taking place around the world. But I think with the Australian with COVID, I think the men's Australian Open wasn't played for 2 years, and then neither was ours, just because of they couldn't get the international players down there to compete. So I think we have a new CEO, James Sutherland, who used to be the CEO of Cricket Australia. So I think he's trying to think outside of the box. You know, he wanted to see something a little different. And I think corporations want to see, you know, if they're putting money into sport, they know that there's a responsibility to do it equally amongst men and women. So it's a lot easier sell, I think, when we're playing the same event on the same venues, you know, that yeah, they're putting in the money and it's going equally to men and women. So I think it's going to be really cool. This year it's at Victoria Golf Club in Kingston Heath, which is a little different because the courses are, you know, they're about 15 minutes apart, 20 minutes drive apart. So for the first 2 days, it'll separate the galleries and stuff, but, you know, it's going to be a great concept. I think,
Are you going to be playing? Are you going to play at it?
Well, that's the plan right now. December's a few months away, but I've played two Australian Women's Opens at Vic and Vic Golf Club in Kingston Heath and fared pretty well. So
do you think we could see a major like this one day? Like men and women at the same venue? Because Pinehurst was sort of like that because we did back-to-back. But I think it'd be so cool if someday we did, you know, a similar idea to the Australian Open, but a major.
Yeah. The venue is definitely hard. And I think, you know, most of the majors are 156 player fields. So, you know, to find a venue that has two quality major golf courses, you know, is that would be challenging. And I don't think the women would be upset if we played for 20 million equal.
No, so. Nope, I don't think so at all. It's trending in that direction though.
Yeah, I know. It seems like all these prize funds are going up and up all the time. So watch this space, hey. And we were talking about, I mean, plenty of Australians you mentioned there, Carrie, that are going to be, that are on the circuit at the moment. The US Open's going to be filled with Aussies. Is that right, Beth?
Yes, absolutely. It is nearly that time for the second major of the year. Thursday, the 2nd of June at Pine Needles, as we mentioned before. And it's a course where Carrie has fared pretty well. She won her second US Open there in 2001. So what sort of memories do you have from that week?
Well, I have a lot of good memories from Pine Needles. I've actually played three US Opens there and played my first ever US Open there in 96 when Annika won. So Pine Needles for me is my introduction to US Open golf. So I really, you know, that to me, when I think of a US Open, I think of Pine Needles as one of the first courses that comes to my mind. And in 2001, when we went back there, I was just couldn't wait. You know, I was at the peak of my game and just couldn't wait to get back there because I knew what to expect that week and I knew I loved the golf course. So it was just a matter of being patient enough to put myself in a position. But you know, that one tournament's probably the only tournament in my career that my preparation, it's only major really where my preparation was good enough to where I was like, without a doubt, I'm going to have a chance to win on Sunday. And then I actually did go on to win. You know, there's lots of factors going in that, you know, that doubt creeps in, even if you are playing well. And for me that week, you know, I got the right side of the draw. We had some storms on Friday. I finished just before, and Friday afternoon was rained out. So everyone else, you know, that wave had to play, you know, upwards of 36 yeah. holes on Saturday. You know, everything fell into place that week. But, you know, what I love about Pine Needles is, you know, it's an iron player short game course. So it's your approach shots into greens. You know, it's a Donna Ross design. So, you know, greens that are half the size landing area to what they actually look. You have to know where all the runoffs are and what side of the green to miss it on to even remotely have a chance of getting it up and down. So, you know, I just loved it for that. And that week, I mean, I was the only player to finish under par. So, you know, I made the most of the luck I got with the draw and then I just played some of the best golf of my career.
Yeah. So you mentioned it's kind of like an iron player's golf course. Who do you think are the favorites? Then do you think Minji has a good chance just because her ball striking stats are unbelievable this
year?
Yeah,
she definitely does. I think Minji's a pretty aggressive player, so it's going to be reining her in a little bit to not going at certain pins because I would say the weakness of Minji's game is her chipping. And, you know, that the up and downs around that course are quite challenging. And you're going to have a lot of confidence chipping on because it's all going to be into the grain once it rolls off those greens. So, you know, you're really going to have to be very decisive as to how you're going to play those shots, whether you're committing to putting or, you know, if the greens are firm, it's really hard to hit one of those, you know, really you know, low spinny shots off mm-hmm. the Bermuda, which is really what comes. You have to hit that really aggressive chip shot out of Bermuda, and it's hard to get something coming onto hard green soft from that. So, yeah, I think players need to spend their time around the greens this, you know, in the lead up to Thursday, and then ball strikers are going to be at the top of the leaderboard. You know, if an Ellie Corder was playing, I would see her up there. I just don't know if she'll be sharp enough if she does play. But if she does, and she is up there, I wouldn't be surprised, because she's a great iron player as well.
Who else is going to be there, actually?
Well, Yuka Saso obviously is returning to defend. And then last year's runners-up, Nasa Hatak, she's been playing great. Nasa has been playing really well, and I think she'd probably be my pick. But there's some breaking news this morning from NB, and she's not playing. She's taking some time off to, quote, get back into top form. And she had obviously finished third at the LA Open and 16th at Palos Verdes, and didn't
so
play
she's
the
struggling,
Founders.
Struggling.
Yes.
Is that when you read, if you read between the lines of that, does that mean she needs to just go and do some practice?
Well, for her standards, apparently, because third isn't that bad, is it?
I know, I don't think so.
I think it's more Indy's love of golf. She takes time away to rekindle her love for playing. So,
but obviously someone who will no doubt feature heavily in the build-up is Annika. She's set to play for the first time since 2008 at the age of 51, so that'll be interesting.
Have you had some good battles with her on the course over your career?
One or two, yeah. we definitely, you know, ironically enough, as much as we competed for the top spot on tour, we didn't really play too many Sundays in final groups together. Maybe if it was 10 times, I think I could be exaggerating, where we were in the last group together. We played a couple of playoffs against one another, which I think is even, one and one, although she got the bigger one. She won Evian. So it wasn't, you know, head to head, we didn't play together. We were paired together a lot in Thursday and Friday rounds, but together in the final group on Sunday was rare.
Not so much. Someone hoping to be up there come Sunday as well is Annika's fellow Swede, Anna Nordqvist, who has been speaking to the Women's Golf Show. So 2021 AIG Women's Open winner. She has three major titles to her name, but she's obviously looking to add the US Women's Open to that list as well.
Just winning one major is so difficult out here, and then now having won three and having won three different, so something that I'm obviously very proud of. Had a chance there at the US Open a couple years ago, so I know I was close, and I mean, it would be a really cool thing to do, but it's just so hard to control your game when it's going to be good and when you're going to peak and what your other competitors are going to do. Would I love to do it? Yes, absolutely. But it's really nothing that crosses my mind. You know, I go into every event trying to do my best, and hopefully I can be in contention. And, you know, if that would mean I would win another one, that would be amazing. But I'm obviously very proud here, having three of them. I feel like it's hard to tee up every week with that kind of feel, or the same feel as you get during a major, or I can't say I get the adrenaline pumping as much maybe as I did my first couple of years on tour in some of the regular events. So it's just something about the majors that kind of gets my focus and my mind a little bit more in the game, and I just love the atmosphere and the tougher courses and the bigger challenge. So definitely those are the events I kind of plan things around, but there's obviously definitely some of the regular events that I enjoy more than others too. So I love the adrenaline, and so the Solheim Cups and the majors, those are the ones that gets me going.
So it's funny how she's saying that, Anna Nordqvist there, how she was saying that she doesn't necessarily feel the same nerves and adrenaline. Is that, did you find, Carrie, that eventually they subside a little after you're in the habit of winning?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's not necessarily, I think you're always nervous. I mean, if you're not nervous on the first tee to some extent, then you're really going through the motions. I can't say that that ever happened to me, but I think the exuberance of when you first come on tour and being young and everything's new and everything's fresh and every town is new and every course is new. And, you know, after 10, 15, 20 years, you know, going to those same venues, getting on those same flights and, you know, dealing with the same, you know, lost golf clubs and all of that, you know, just wears on you to the point where you know, that course that you don't love, but it fits well in the schedule every year, you're there, you know, you're not really excited about. You played well there once, so you think, well, maybe I do like it. So it does, it gets to that where you've got to try and get your mind to at least be like, okay, well, if I am trying to peak at majors, I need to get something out of this week. I need to be into this week and into playing. So yeah, there is a certain amount of going through the motions. But I would say I was still always up for it on the first tee. But you know, depending on how the first 18 holes went, was determined how much I was really into it for the rest. I mean, I never ever didn't try, but there's certain different levels of mental focus that subconsciously you just enter. You know, I don't even think sometimes you have control over how interested you are at where you are.
Absolutely. I mean, you mentioned about preparing for majors earlier. Was there something like in the schedule that you would try? Would you play the week before or would you not? Or did it just depend on how you're feeling?
I think it depended on how I was feeling, what the schedule is. Like the schedule this week is they're playing match play in Vegas, and then Pine Needles is hard to get to. It's hard to get to from Florida. So to get to from Vegas, I don't know. I wouldn't be playing this week. You want to sort of if you're playing the week before, to be on similar grass at least. Mm-hmm. So, you know, so for me, Pine Needles, it's going to probably be Bermuda. I'd just be here in Florida. I wouldn't probably be playing the week before, but sometimes it worked out that way. Like, Evian and the Open used to be back to back. So you sort of just, you did play the week before and playing Evian before a Lynx course was not the best prep for a major, but, you know, it's just, just made sense to do those two. So it just depended on the schedule.
Okay, now I have to ask you both, are you ready? I want to know who you think is going to win. Come on, lay it down. Let's see if you get it right next time.
Well, I say NASA Hataoka. I think NASA.
Oh, that's right. You said was your favorite. Mm-hmm. I'll have to go with one of the Aussies. I think Minji will be up there. Hannah Green's been playing good, so I'm going to go with Greeny.
I knew you were going to say that.
We will take note of these and we will get back to you if you get it right. And if you get it wrong, we'll just be quiet about it. As you may know, each show we do like to highlight women as well who are making their mark in the game in our series Iona Meets. So today, Iona Stevens speaking to someone who is carving out a name for herself in golf and many other sports with her incredible photographs of the highs and lows that the game produces. Here's Iona to explain more.
This week, I've been speaking to Getty photographer Naomi Baker, who started her career in golf at the RNA's Under-16 Girls Amateur Championship back in 2018. From there, she quickly rose to cover major sporting events across the globe and is now a very hard woman to book for any tournament. We managed to meet up at this year's Girls Under-16 Amateur at Enville Golf Club, and I took her back to the beginning of her journey.
So it started for me, I used to row a lot. So I used to take my camera to regattas and like events with them. And I just take pictures of my friends, just like what was going on. And then that kind of like piqued my interest in photography. And it kind of just led on from there. I did it at school and then college and then at university. And then that's where I kind of really took it to sport. Before that, it was kind of a bit of everything, like landscapes or like art projects and things like that. But it was like the final year at uni when I did sport. So I didn't want to leave and not have anything. I wanted to leave and have something in place. So I kind of contacted a lot of people. So while I was there, I was working with the GB rowing team. So I was following them around like events internationally, which was such an amazing experience just to meet people and just to travel. And, you know, that's such a big part of it, just aside from the photography, all that aspects as well. So that really helped.
And tell us about your first golf event that you covered.
So yeah, 4 years ago, I did the Girls Under 16 Championship. And yeah, that kind of started it for me. And then just watching them play piqued my interest. So I started playing and now I just want to shoot more golf. And I love to just be out here and it's so nice. You can just walk around and find pictures and it's just a nice atmosphere, really.
Now, golf is a very different sport to many. It's not in a stadium. There's not necessarily dedicated photographer areas. How did you find that at your first few events?
I remember the first event I did, I was asking the photographer I was with, like, where I can go. I was very conscious of that because you're at a football game and it's so loud and you're not really conscious of that at all because you've got fans screaming behind you and that kind of thing. But here it's so quiet and you can't move when you're at the green and all that stuff. So you kind of have to, I think the one thing they told me was just to make sure you're in place before they start sort of like taking their practice swings and stuff, because if you move, like, no, it's a no-go. So you just don't want to distract the person you're taking a picture of, really. With football, you could go to a game and it's 0-0 and you can go home and think, oh, like, I didn't get much from that. But with golf, you can think more, I think. Like, with football, you go and you choose an end, or if you're there with another Getty photographer, you flip a coin and you kind of, it's luck at the end of the day. And then here, you can just walk around, you can find pictures. And as you said, like, you've got the whole day and you can do sunrise, sunset, there's nice light, there's a lot to play with, I think.
And finally, to the rest of 2022, do you have any big tournaments coming up?
I've got the Women's Open later on this year, which I'm really excited about. I'd say that's probably the event I'm looking forward to the most this year.
Amazing. And if you do want to see some of Naomi's snaps, you can see her work, including the work from the Girls Under 16 Amateur, on her Instagram, which is at Naomi Baker Photo. There you go. And talking about photographs and listening to them talking about it, I did have a little Google to see if I could find any really embarrassing photos of either of you, Beth and Carrie, because when you play golf, you can't control your facial expressions sometimes or the way you... But actually, all the photos of you are very nice.
I really find that hard to believe.
Strong golf swings on there. A lot of cap wearing and visor wearing. But yeah, looking good. Are there any photos that you have? Do you have just like hallways filled with photographs? Because you must get given them at every single event.
Well, some of us have more photos than others. I've been fortunate enough to go to Kari's house in Florida, and she's won a lot of times, which means there's a lot of photos and trophies, which is amazing. I mean, I could think of a couple of Kari's that I really like, but I'll let her answer what her favorite is.
I mentioned the tournament earlier. When I hauled the wedge on the last hole of the 2006 Craft Nabisco, after that went in, I jumped in my caddy Mikey's arms. He had the bag on his back and me in his arms, fist pumping in the air. And that photo is my favorite photo.
Yeah, it's a good one for sure.
How about you, Beth? What's the photo that you kind of love the most?
There's a photo of me when I won my first event, which was the Ladies European Masters at the Buckinghamshire in 2015. And they were just announcing me as the winner to go on stage and do my thank yous. And it's a picture of like Dame Laura Davies is looking at me, and one of my best friends on tour, Flake Johnson, is like looking at me too, and I'm basically just never looked happier. So I really like that one. And that's in a frame at my house. And my mom gave it to me for Christmas on a keychain, and I'm like, really? But she likes it too. So yeah, that's my favorite one.
I mean, it's amazing. Some of the photos they capture are incredible. I mean, photographers have to be good. They must just be taking millions of photos. And although we don't see all the rubbish ones, you know, we do see the brilliant ones. So they must take a lot to get those few absolute classics. And when you're playing, are you ever aware of them taking photos of you?
Yeah, I was going to say good photographers, no. But there's, you know, they can't, you know, they're doing their job just while we're doing ours, and they're trying to get the best angle. So sometimes, you know, they're still getting into position, you know, as we're coming in to hit. So, I mean, you know, they're there. I think you get used to it. There's one photo that I tried to track down over the years, and it just can't be found. But I would say there would have been no short of 100 photographers on the first hole. And it was, I played in Japan in 2005, 2006, at the Salompas World Ladies. And I was paired with Ai Miyazato before she came to the LPGA, and Sakura Yokomine. So they were the two top young players on the JLPGA, and that tournament's always played the beginning of May, and it's called Golden Week. So a lot of people have the whole week off, and the crowds were enormous. I would say on the first hole, they had to, it just behind the tee, which was like this big amphitheater, there had to be 10,000 people.
What?
Like it was down the whole hole at least 10,000, around the tee 5,000 people. Like I've never hit a golf shot in front of so many people. Like I haven't been fortunate enough to play a Solheim Cup, so but for me that moment was I stood on the tee and I'm like, I don't, you know, just enjoy today. It doesn't matter how you play. Like, you're never playing in front of this many people ever again. And the tee was elevated, and the photographers were all down below the tee shooting back up at us, the three of us on the tee. And I just want that photo of all the people around. And I have never, ever found it. And, my agent in Japan's asked, and for years after that, every photographer, did you cover this event? Yep. Do you have this photo? No one has it. And I'm like, they would have snapped between them. They would have snapped 5,000 photos in that time.
What I want to know is, what was that shot like? Did it go well for you? Because it must have been quite stressful.
Yeah, I think I probably necked it down the middle, but I don't even remember. I just remember feeling, I just so overwhelmed by how many people were there on the first tee. And it was a Thursday, wasn't Sunday, it was a Thursday.
Okay, well, I mean, you say you're overwhelmed at that. Nothing will have you more overwhelmed than this. Look how excited Beth is. It is time for par three, par four, par five. This is the Women's Golf Show's cryptic clue guessing game. I like to say that everyone is talking about it. I'm amazed, Carrie, that you haven't heard about it before now.
I have not.
Okay, well, you'll
very
be
nervous.
You'll be telling everyone Should after be. This. Let me tell you. Okay, so I have some famous women in golf, and for each one, I have three clues to who their identities are. Okay, so you basically just have to figure out who they are. And you can choose your clue.
Do we jump in?
Well, you get to choose your clue. So you can choose par three, par four, or par five. If you choose par three, there are three words as your clue. Par four, there are four words. And par five, there are five words. That gets confusing now. 3 points for par three, a little bit less for par four, two, and less 1 point for a par five. And you can steal another person's clue. So if they get it wrong, you can come in. Okay, so here we go. Carrie, I think we let you go first. We always let our visitors go first. So for your first one, would you like a par 3, a par 4, or a par 5?
I hate starting on a par 3, so let's go with a par 4.
Okay, par 4. Players Series History Maker.
Players Series History Maker. Players Series. What is the Players Series?
Yeah, what's a Players Series? Okay.
Players Series. It has to be before I was on tour, so I'm going to say Beth Daniel.
Okay, it was a good guess, but it is not the name we are looking for. So, Beth, you can come in now and you can go with a par 3 or a par 5.
I'm going par 5 because this, I don't know about that first clue that's got me.
Okay, wire to wire PGA champ.
Okay. Wire to wire LPGA Tour champ. Right. I'm Annika.
Nope, it's not. We can come back. If you want, you can take the par 3 here, Carrie.
Might as well.
All right. Okay. Let's try it.
From tee to
green. Tammy Green.
No, it's Hannah Green.
Hannah Green.
Because your player's yours.
Huh?
It's yours.
I was going back in time, Hannah Green. What is the Players Series?
So she was the first woman to win a WebEx Player Series event back in February this year. Okay. And then she led from day one on the way to winning the 2019 PGA Championship.
Yes, she did. See? I just said she won wide away.
I know you did.
So you see, I mean, it's really obvious now, you see?
Okay. Well, no, see, my problem was that I didn't know what the Players Series was, so
me
I'm
too.
Thinking in history. Okay. It's back before I was on tour, so that's why I said
I'm going to hand that official complaint to our official question writers. I will pass that on. Okay, next one. Okay. Beth, par 3, par 4, or par 5?
Par 4, please.
Boyfriend on her bag.
Okay, boyfriend on the bag. There's a lot, I think. How about... Oh, boyfriend, not husband. That changes things. Well, I can't think of a boyfriend right now. I'm going to say Pernille Ellenberg.
Okay, that's a good guess, but it's not
that's
what
husband.
We're looking for.
I know,
so
but
so now, Carrie, you can steal. Would you like a par 3 or a par 5?
She knows it.
All right, I'll try par 5.
Par 5, okay. Biggest win at Royal Lytham.
Yeah, I already had it, Georgia Hall.
Ah, well done. That was
I was
good.
Like, pick me, pick me.
Okay, so we have some points on the board. This is very exciting now. Okay, so now it is your turn again, actually, here, Carrie. Are you ready? You've got 1 point. Beth has nil point. Would you like par 3, par 4, or par 5?
Par 4.
Okay. Sporting pair of siblings.
Ooh. If we're going current, I guess it's Jess and Nelly Korda.
Yes, you got it right. Well done. Jessica Korda, obviously Sister Jessica there, is a multiple time LPGA Tour winner, and their brother Sebastian is a professional tennis player who's currently ranked in the top 100 in the world. Her dad won the Australian Open in tennis, and her mum's also an ex-pro tennis player. They're just like a really sporty family, aren't they?
Yeah, yes, they've got all the good genes.
Okay, so the scoring is now that Carrie has 3 points. Beth, you are still to score, so you need to get a good scoring here, okay? Par 3, par 4, or par 5?
Has to be par 3. I have to catch up.
From Kettering, England.
Charlie Hull.
Straight in. You did. You got that. It is indeed Charlie Hull. She is from Kettering. That is correct. Oh my goodness, that means...
That's good. I wouldn't have got that.
And that's 3-all, so it's a tie break now. So it's par 3, par 4, par 5. And
it's our first tie break.
This is the first tie break. Carrie, which one do you want?
Par 4.
Okay. One of the greatest. And there's like, there's a few people that it could refer
yeah.
to.
I don't know. I guess I'll say Annika Sørenstam. We did talk about her today.
Correct. You've smashed it. You have won.
The irony. Amazing.
Well done to you. So that is a loss for you, Beth, and a big fat win for Carrie. Yes, well done. 5 points to 3. Well done. I mean, didn't you love that? Didn't you love it?
2 weeks of losses in a row. Devastating.
I learnt so much.
I know. I'm so happy to be asking the questions. Look, thank you so much. That is it for this week. Carrie, it has been honestly such a privilege having you on the show. We wish you all the best with everything that's going on. And so good luck. Really, really look forward to catching up with everything that happens the rest of the year as well.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Okay, perfect. And remember, you can get in touch with the Women's Golf Show at any point using hashtag TWGS on Instagram or on Twitter. And any questions or comments are totally welcome, even pictures. If you're out for a round and you want us to see how impressive you look on the golf course, do message us as well. Beth, thank you so much.
Always a pleasure.
You'll be back with me to review all the goings on in Pine Needles, actually, in 2 weeks' time, won't you? And there should be loads to talk about.
Yeah, there will be a lot to talk about. I have a feeling some dodgy short games after this conversation with Kari. So, I'm looking forward to it.
Okay, and we will be on the same time zone then as well, because you will be back in Scotland after all your time fishing in America.
Yes. And I'll have at least 2 rounds of golf on links golf courses and big lunches under my belt by the time I speak to you next.
Excellent. Well, I look forward to catching up. Carrie, thank you so much. And thank you so much for listening.